It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Hit by the train is because we just stepped to the side of the track. You know, said no, it didn't hit us, but that doesn't mean the train's not plowing down. I mean, anything on the track, boom, get off the track. And in the last hour we had Pete Kendall on from ElliottWave.com, and it's unfair for me to have Elliott Wave come on and give me details about certain things because they don't even look at it that way. You know, what's interesting is the accuracy at which they predict the market is not based on, you know, really even fundamentals of, you know, the underlying stock and so on, because they don't see the stock market reacting to fundamentals anyway. I give you Freddie and Fannie. And that's not how they look at it. The Elliott Wave is an old concept that goes back, to the 30s, 40s, I think. You know, we'll have Robert Prechter on another time when he's not so busy and we can talk about it. But it basically comes down to something like this. The value of something is what somebody will pay for it. There's a lot of other factors go into what they'll pay for it. I mean, you got, you know, that was the one thing that I really push people going and watching the BBC special, The Century of the Self. And it's a BBC special they did years ago that, I guess at least 4 or 5 years ago. And it was very interesting in how they took Freudian principles and applied it to public relations. And they created the concept public relations and, you know, focus groups and all this kind of stuff. You know, how does this candidate product, bar of soap, car make you feel? In fact, last night we were over at some friend's house, and they're a young couple in their mid-20s, and, good classic movies just to have a feel-good. Can we just dissociate from the crap? Can we just have a relaxing time and watch Doris Day and James Gardner? And I can't remember the thrill of it all. I think it was the movie. And it's pleasant just to, you know, relax. And, you know, Doris Day, back when I was a kid, I used to like her anyway. And it was about her getting – he's a doctor, and she's a doctor's wife. And she was offered an opportunity by one of his patient's husbands or father-in-law or something to sell soap. And it was live. I mean, that was back in when they used to do live commercials. You'd have blah, 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 Playhouse brought to you by General Electric and whatever, and here come Ronald Reagan, they're selling you stoves. Well, she was, Doris Day played a character that was just selling soap. And she sold a lot of soap. Why? Well, she's cute and she's wholesome and she's just telling a story and made the people feel good about buying soap. And they will buy that soap, happy soap, until they don't feel good about buying happy soap. How much better is it than the other soaps? You know, if you get up and it used to be thought that way, you know, if you look at old advertisements in the Sears catalog for back in the day or so on, you would have, it's got this spec, it does this, it scrubs that, it cleans this. It's, you know, all the features of it, you know, accurate or not. I mean, they're giving you details of something. These are the fundamentals of the product. These are the fundamentals of the stock. These are the fundamentals of the market. These are the fundamentals of the home. These are the fundamentals of whatever. That doesn't sell near as good as, ooh, look at the cleavage on that female in the bathtub with the soapy, sudsy kind of whatever, and buy my mascara. Okay, you'll lose weight, you'll get the girl. Here's the shiny car and the convertible and the little sports car that you can't store anything in. It leaks really bad from the convertible top. But you know what? He's got the babe in the passenger seat. It's all perception. It's all how it makes you feel, because we are human beings, and that can be taken advantage of. Stock market, perfect example. Even back in the time when you had the Sears catalog or Montgomery Ward's or whatever, and they're selling stuff and doing the features of and this and that, you sure as heck got the snake oil salesman. Yeah, step right up and get your ism right here. Okay? How do we insulate ourselves from that? Well, you probably won't, you can be a little better as time goes on. Age will do it. Information does it. Experience does it. Experience from other people, a culture that goes back to the fundamentals of what's important. That's why it's so difficult for Americans, and certainly our military, government, and so on. They can't comprehend why it is that we can't just export democracy with a gun to people's heads around the world and say, you want blue jeans and light beer. Okay. What if they don't? Then what? You gonna make them? How do you make them? You start having the youth watching television. You pipe in movies. You got Blockbuster, De La, whatever. Don't you want a Corvette? You don't have Rhodes, but man, you want the Corvette. Or the Transformer 2010 Camaro. I like that Camaro. That's tasty. But, you got to be able to use your intellect and go, yeah, but, because as time goes on, as you get older, I'm almost 50. And, I've gone through the process before by which I would actually get something that I wanted. And then you get the flash of it when you get it. And then you start, realizing the practical application of owning it, what it actually did for you. Did it get you the babes? Did your hair get thicker? Did you get taller? Did somehow you get better looking, because you own this, whiz bang, whatever. It's like, smartphones. I'm like, look, I say, blah, 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 blah. I want it to do what I want it to give me the computer, that and so on. You start looking at things much more practically. That's why what's the biggest demographic that the advertisers want? Young males. You're 18 to 35. Oh, that's what they want. Who wants to go after that? People that want to sell stuff. That's why you have guys like Jon Stewart of The Daily Show. They love him for the size of his audience. Hey, I bet he gets a bunch of money, per person, way more than they do on other groups. Why? Because they're much more malleable, much easier to convince to buy something based on how it's going to make them feel. Life experience gives you, I don't feel good about losing money. I don't feel good about, investing in something that's not going to give me goody, and it's not, but they can still get you. How? Promises, the future, your pension, you're investing in government, the idea of they're going to take care of you later on. When do you get that? When do you start getting the realization of that? When you're 65, 70, you're retired and everything's gone? Yeah, how you feeling about it then? It's a mood. And these moods and this awareness goes in waves. Once we hit the bottom, you kind of get what you think is the bottom, it'll go up, and then it'll go even lower. There's waves of this. This is what they're tracking, the Elliott wave. They're going, look, this goes in waves. And sooner or later, and the waves, I think, I recognize this. I always thought it was very interesting since 2003. I kind of follow what they, because they make a prediction. You wait a year or two or three and you go, yep, that's what they said. So this has a lot of validity. But the wave is still, it always is manifested because of an underlying fundamental principle of what something's really worth. They would have to change us as human beings and rewire our brains to make us perceive that, not eating and not having food would be a good thing. Oh, oh yes, you know, it's forced weight loss. you never know. I mean, it could be a chemical. It could be a chemtrail. It could be, you know, an additive. It could be, you know, fluoride in the toothpaste. It could be, you know, whatever in the water. It could be Lord knows what that changes, you know, your perception on something, even a little bit. Even what's it worth on a global scale for a half a percent? A percent of the people to think, you know, more about something or something else they normally wouldn't. And it's done by what? You know, something as overt as something like public education, government, schools. What do you think that they're telling the young kids as they go? That's why they have junior high separate from elementary and high school. Junior high is when you start going into puberty. Junior high is when you start questioning authority. You know, and if you question authority, they're going to try and direct that into, well, this is how you question it. You go vote. Is that it? Is that it? Is that it, really? So, you know, this is, I can see that as a species, as human beings, information is going to help us evolve. Because we are pretty much the same as we've been for tens of thousands of years. It's going to be the responsibility of each of us to evolve ourselves. And we're trying to help.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day here on the Liberty Radio News Network. You know, I just want to make sure that we're prepared. We don't get blindsided by this thing. I have friends and family and loved ones and audience and people that, you know, count on me not to lie to them. You know, and when you're involved in politics, they want you to lie. And I didn't really say I'm really involved in politics. I take advantage of politics. Politics is, I don't know, elect me to rule your life. I mean, or what? I mean, I'm not even sure what you're looking for. We need a leader. I heard this a lot during the 08 election cycle, during the Lovelution around Dr. Paul. We need a leader that and that. And even Dr. Paul be saying, I'm not your leader. You know, I'm not going to lead anything. I'm just, you know, advocating for a philosophy. You know, this is what you should support this too on your own. It's your responsibility. What am I, your babysitter, your mother, your big brother? You know, I'm in the last hour today, we're going to talk with Scott Horton. Scott Horton's a good friend. He's has a radio podcast. It's called antiwar.com radio, and it's an offshoot of antiwar.com. And we've had Eric Garris, the founder of antiwar.com, on the show before too. And it's such a very, very good thing to be anti-kill people. I mean, how can you not be? I mean, now defense, I mean, you know, that's a whole nother thing. You know, you know what's amazing to me is during before World War II, it was called the War Department. You know, it was defensive. It didn't become offensive until they called it the Defense Department. you know, government, it's like a game they play with you. It's always the opposite of whatever they say. Can we go back to the War Department so we can, you know, advocate for maintaining peace? You know, it's just, man, they're just messing with your head. And it's intentional. It's overt. It's a psyop or something. It's just, you know, they play on, I don't think they play on our weakness. You know, that's the argument a lot. They play on our weaknesses. Well, I don't see love and compassion and humanity as a weakness. It's our strength, but it's taken advantage of. It's why they have to spend trillions of dollars over generations to get you to think that government is benign in some way. But what happens if you're paying attention? You know, what's the saying, the joke? What's the difference between an anarchist and a libertarian? About 6 or 7 years if you're paying attention. And why? And to libertarians, you know, that'll provoke a smile because we know what that means. You go through, you know, 2-3 election cycles, and you're going, "Oh, I get it." You know, it's a game. You know, you just sometimes you just don't want to play the game anymore. So I'm going, okay, you know, we can go through this process and take advantage of the political process for us to be able to educate people. So that's what we do. What I want to do for the rest of this hour is just go over some of the headlines that, as we're busy, you know, talking about the news of the day and, you know, having guests and so on, you kind of miss some of the headlines. And, I mean, some of it's just, you know, messes you up in the head. You go to today's archive show, you go to freedomsphoenix.com, freedoms with an S, phoenix.com, and the top story is the archive for the show. You know, and it kind of scrolls down. Then the next day we'll have the morning and the afternoon show, and it'll scroll down. And, you know, we'll put the archive up, and it'll be there. And then you can listen or forward the show on. It has some of the information on the guests that we've had and so on. It's, you know, it's a very useful tool. But, you know, if we go to the freedomsphoenix.com, you'll see a lot of the stories there. And inside today's archive show, I put the definition of cognitive dissidence. I always hear it a lot. You know, Charles used to use it a lot. You know, a guy I used to produce for. And some people, oh, the cognitive dissidence. And I never really understood what it meant until you go in and they'll say, yeah, it's just, you know, you've got competing ideas and so on. But I'm going to read it to you because I want you to understand it's the feeling that you're having now if you had not had the libertarian perspective explained to you before. If you have not had someone saying, look, man, this government thing is a psyop. It's there to get you convinced that, you know, the solution is them. You know, the solution is the government taking over Freddie and Fannie. You know, the solution is them keep taking more of your money to keep propping them up. The solution is them having a bailout that you're taking money from the next generation, your kids and grandkids, to go ahead and give to the bankers. The solution is how are they able to do that? And what happens when you start to come across evidence that's totally contrary to that, to something that you have come to believe as a progressive, as a liberal, as a socialist, as a fascist, as a conservative, as a supporter of government? In general, what happens when you start to see, you start getting, you know, emotions that you don't know how to deal with? That's cognitive dissidence. Let me go ahead and read this. You'll understand my point. Cognitive dissidence is an uncomfortable feeling caused by holding two contradictory ideas simultaneously. The theory of cognitive dissidence proposes that people have a motivational drive to reduce dissidence by changing their attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors, or by justifying or rationalizing them. It is one of the most influential and extensively studied theories in social psychology. Dissidence occurs when a person perceives a logical inconsistency in their beliefs, when one idea implies the opposite of another. The dissidence might be experienced as guilt, anger, frustration, or even embarrassment. This is what people are starting to feel. It's a frustration. It's an anger. And they want to try and direct it towards what they want. They, them, those. Those that just want to be, there are those that just want to be left alone. Those won't leave them alone. So you want to know who they, them, those are? It's those that won't leave you alone. Everybody's going, well, who they, who are they? Let me tell you who they are. They're the ones that will not leave you alone, and they're willing to use collective force in the name of fill in the blank, you know, government or guys with guns or with badges or, you know, your deacons or your pastor or whatever. There are those that would use, you know, force of actually taking your stuff or putting a 45 to your soul and saying it's going to hell if you don't, whatever. I mean, it's those that would use force or threat of force to make you believe something that you know is just not right. You go, man, I read the New Testament. Christ didn't say that. He didn't advocate that. He didn't support that. You know, so I became libertarian because I was Christian. You know, I did the acceptance of Christ. To me, Christianity was to be Christ-like. You know, I didn't know it came with all this other stuff that they keep piling on me. You know, I understand, you know, it's accepting as a son of God and all that. I mean, as time has gone on, I'm starting to see such evidence against what the church has been doing. I'm not an evangelical as somebody would be out there, but I believe that, you know, my God's my God. You know what? He's in my head. It's my, I get to decide it's mine. Now, you know, and have you read the Bible straight through twice? I mean, you want to go toe-to-toe with me? Let's do it. But, you know, it's not the point. The point is the cognitive dissonance was that I would read something and have the words of Christ right here and then have something totally different to that, but they were saying they were the same thing. I give you the Tea Party. You know, the Tea Party movement, they're going, hey, man, you know, Jesus wants you to go kill Muslims. Really? And where was that? Well, it's right here. Well, first, that's Old Testament, but, you know, I'm going, is that the love? Can we have, you know, where's the love in here? Where's the forgiveness? Where's the through me? You know, where's the, you know, this is exactly what I'm talking about. It is this competing ideas that both are supported with ration and reason and logic. But which one do you choose? I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help myself and just share it with you. I just want to be left alone. Who's the bad guys? They're the ones that won't leave me alone. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Used to be the American way, I think. I don't know what we're fighting for. You know, this is what we're going to do. We had Andrea Garcia just come by to get some supplies she wanted to take and do some stuff, and I got and I snatched her. And I said, come here, Andrea, tell your story. What are you doing? And, you know, because you were in here yesterday. It was yesterday that we had you were here, right?
Correct.
Yesterday, she's a candidate running as a libertarian against...
Russell Pierce,
Mr. 1070. Okay. So we're going to get this issue is going to get discussed. Well, she had a reporter in here, met you here yesterday. And who was that? What were you guys discussing?
His name was Samuel. He was from the Arizona Republic, has a satellite newspaper called La Voz, which targets the Hispanic community. So my story will be printed in Spanish and in English to get the word out to the Latino community, being that I'm Latina. That there's a candidate running against Russell Pierce who has the answer to freedom.
You know, it's interesting that you were part of the Ron Paul Revolution. Weren't you a Republican precinct committee woman?
Yes, I was. A state committee woman and treasurer for LD22.
Ooh. And, you know, one thing that was of interest is that, I mean, you were definitely on everybody's list. Email, they wanted to contact me, need to be nice to Andrea. Oh, because of your involvement with Campaign for Liberty, too.
And camera fraud.
So this is, Andrea is, and what's your profession? What do you do?
I am a respiratory therapist.
So she's, you know, she's raising a family, got a job out in the East Valley doing whatever happens to live in Russell Pierce's district. And from just our involvement, we understood what this was really about, his national ID. And so was he going to have somebody go up against him? Well, Andrea said, let's play.
Correct. I just felt like no candidate A should ever run uncontested, even if I agreed with them, but especially not if we disagree. And you're running as a small government pro-liberty candidate, and you are the exact opposite.
And he is, yeah, I know Russell well, and I'm sure you have met him many times.
I've worked for Russell when I worked in the Republican Party.
What his, we could go on and on and on about, I've known him for a long time. I have archives of us doing radio interviews. He's spoken at the Breakfast Club, you know, and we're friendly with each other. But I've always known that he's always been around this national ID thing. Now, I mean, I don't care what you call it. He's always been for, you know, given a national number. It's all been about national numbering of everybody. And I'm glad that you chose to take the heat and come in and go, oh, we're going to talk about this. And you doing this and being on, we just turned in all the stuff. You're on the ballot now. You're ready. We're going to have a primary and a general. You're going to be there all the way to November. And what kind of response have you gotten from the people inside the Republican Party?
Inside the Republican Party, it's been mixed. The term politics makes strange bedfellows comes to mind. People that if you would have asked me 2 years ago, I thought would be the people that would be the most supportive, have been the, I would have said, no way, you're crazy.
And if of course you're going to have the left on because it's immigration issue, but have you been able, because they're looking at it a totally different way. I mean, they're just like, you know, I'm Mexican, and I want my Mexican friends to be here in Mexico, we can be Mexican, you know, in America. And that's not your angle on this at all. Do they understand when you do explain why you're doing it?
Well, they do, and the ones that get it either get it or they don't. I've been working with other Republican organizations like the Somos Republicans on one side. And then on the other side, I have Democratic organizations coming to me saying, what can we do to get behind you? I tell them this is the thing with 1070 is it is about controlling everybody. It's about every citizen having to have a real ID, every citizen having to have papers on them all the time. And I keep telling the left side, if you think amnesty is going to save you, it certainly is not going to save you. Because amnesty was already passed, we still have the problem. Until we get to the root cause of immigration, we're always going to have the problem. And they're going to try to come in and say, oh, we're going to give you amnesty. And I've already told them, you guys are going to line up, and you're going to get your little biometrically encoded cards, and it's going to sell out my freedom as well as everybody else's.
And their response, because I've had guys, you know, his name was
Shia Uono.
Yeah, Uono. He represents, I don't know, Immigration Reform Day Law, whatever it is, out of Washington.
Correct. Immigration Reform America.
And he came on and we had this discussion. And I go, look, I know what's going to happen. You know, you go up far enough up the left side and right side of the pyramid, you find the same guys in control. And I go, sooner or later, they're going to be coming to you and need your participation in, oh, yeah. We want, you know, we're willing, as long as we get to stay here, we get some kind of limited amnesty, or we get little, I get the work here cards or whatever, I get a special license plate, I get a biometric chip, I get, you know, whatever the heck it is, yes, we will line up to do that, and guess what, you just sold me out.
Correct.
So I'm going, you know, if you were to come out and say, no, we don't want any of your goodies. We don't want any welfare. We're not going to take, you'll give us instead of a card. You know, how about you just make it to where we don't get to get access to anything. And we voluntarily just say, we'll put our name on the list, that list. We'll be on the list that we don't get any access to goodies and we don't have to number everybody else. I just something, but don't enslave me and think I'm going to be, yay, I love immigration now because you enslaved me.
Well, and the party, what I've seen that's happening among the Republicans, it's been kind of a funny thing. I switched to Libertarian a while back when I first moved in that district and realized all the precincts were full. And then it's been kind of an awakening watching the Republican Party tear themselves apart over this immigration issue. People that have proposed decent, you know, immigration, I don't use immigration reform or pathway to citizenship because I believe those are catchwords for amnesty, but I want to write an article called What Really Is Amnesty? So is it unreasonable that I ask that I don't get sold out and have to have a biometric card or show my papers all the time, but that also on the immigration side, it's an unreasonable issue. And both they're viewing it as black and white. And I've been labeled now as an amnesty lover. And just simply because you're willing to talk, simply because you're asking both sides to come out and say, what would be a reasonable solution that doesn't sell out my rights?
You know, I've seen this before throughout history, and it happened here in America in the 50s where they just rounded up and shipped people off. It's happened in Nazi Germany when they, you know, it's always the Jews' fault or somebody's fault. You know, their fault. We have so much pain and suffering caused by government, and they just want to direct it to the brown people. I mean, you know, it's over there.
The Muslims.
And, yeah, whatever. I mean,
different brown people.
Somebody else. You know, it's not us. You know, it's them. You know, whoever them is. Fill in the blank them, and we'll get you to sell out whatever for us to going after them. But don't you feel better? And I've seen you've been involved in the Tea Party movement here and so on. And we knew what was going to happen. The Tea Party really started with the Ron Paul thing. You know, the Tea Party, they raised a bunch of money then. We had big rallies. And then all of a sudden, here they come. You know, Fox News and Clear Channel get their permit for the stage and the microphone. They go, oh, it's ours now. And the first one that they did here was was Americans for Prosperity. Is that it? You know, Tom Jenny's
Tom
thing?
Yes, Tom Jenny's group.
And Tom Jenny used to be the Goldwater Institute. He's been, you know, back. That is his job. He's AstroTurf, okay, and proud of it. He carries a little square thing of AstroTurf around his neck, man. He's proud of it. Yep, you want to have some AstroTurf? You know, I'm your man. And I've had him on the show. I mean, he's not embarrassed by it. That is what he does. He's able to work with these different right organizations, the Republican Party, the Republican support of, you know, from different media and so on. He can get a nice little crowd going. And the first ones that they did at the Arizona State Legislature at the Capitol building, you know, I was one of the featured speakers. They had to. Because we're the ones that did it. You know, they're going, yeah, come on. And I'm going, hey, the first thing out of my mouth was, hey, man, I'm not with any of these guys. Okay. And let me tell you the role that Andrea played. I just remembered this. This is good. Andrea was there. When the TARP fund was done, when they passed that, well, at first it lost. And we're on Freedom's Phoenix talking, yeah, how many hours do you think before they're going to reintroduce it? You know, it's, of course, I voted against it the first time, you know, and then they're going to bring in another, here it comes. They were going to get their bailout. Well, it wasn't so much about the bailout, which was bad enough. It was about the increase of power to the executive branch and the Federal Reserve and all this other stuff. We saw this coming. You know, Dr. Paul made a big deal out of it. We knew, a lot of us that, you know, were paying attention and knew where to get the answers, we knew what was coming. They have to get somebody that voted against it initially to bring it back. And the person they chose, John S.S. Shattuck, okay? John Shattuck, I ran against him 3 times for Congress in 96, 98, and in 2000. The reason I originally ran against him was because he supported a bill called H.R. 666. Well, it was aptly numbered. And it was, you know, it was to give the government the ability to just basically come into your house, grab your hard drive without any evidence of a crime or anything on there, look at it and go, aha, see, we knew there was something on there, and then they get you. You know, that's what was behind it. Well, he came in and reintroduced this bill, and it passed. And I made it clear to them, you do that, oh, man, I'm going to tattoo a swastika on your butt forever. As I was giving the speech, Andrea's out there holding the sign, National Socialism of the Economy isn't fascist, .. When I do it, John S.S. Shattuck. And they didn't like it none too much.
No, and then he lied and said, I didn't vote for the bill.
Yeah. Now he's not running. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock. Oh,
yeah. Your smile speaks books to me. Break up. Believe in everyone on your lips. When you're starting something deep inside.
I make you smile. Oh, you start something deep inside of me, Andrea Garcia. And she's a hot little thing, too. So that doesn't hurt. You know, the thing is that she is going to be a little spitfire in their face. Always has been for a long time. In fact, I'll tell you, right after they voted for the TARP, and they thought they could get away with it, and there was I think it was the 20th anniversary of the Goldwater Institute, or 25th, or something like that, down at the Arizona Biltmore. And I was invited, and I sat at a table along with some friends and so on inside during this, and the mood was very subdued. It was not a happy time. And one of the things was, on the program, they had listed Jeff Flake, a congressman. They had listed John Kyle, senator, U.S. senator. And they had John Shattuck. All 3 of them didn't show up. They just, hey, it wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. Why? Because at the entrance to the Arizona Biltmore were a bunch of Ron Paul revolutionaries out there with signs, National Socialization of the Economy isn't fascist. When I do it, .. John S.S. Shattuck. And the thing is that, and because of the Shattuck, we had a kind of the lightning bolt SS, you know, and they're letting them know, man, this is Nazism, this is National Socialism, this is what this is. So this has been, we just hammered on. We did, 100 of those signs. I mean, they're just, you know, we just keep making, putting, and finally, he goes, you know what, I'm not running this time.
Well, and they came back to haunt him. I hunted him down, myself and Morpheus at a breakfast, and we finally cornered him, and I told him, he asked if our cameras were on. I said, of course not. And he was the host of the event, so we had to be respectful. And I just told him, I said, John, when are you going to apologize to us for voting for this? You know it was wrong. You knew that you were morally wrong. Why did you do it? I spoke with your wife. I called your home the eve before the vote. And you knew that this we were going to hunt you down and relentlessly hold your feet to the fire. And he goes, you know what, Andrea, it was a mistake. He goes, all I will tell you is you don't know the pressures that were on us, and you do not know what the back deals that go on, which
yeah.
I was
so?
Like, okay. He yeah. apologized, so I backed off of him a little bit, but it's kind of funny he's not running.
Yeah, and somebody did have a camera on him, pointed yeah. down, got the audio of it, so, you know, we definitely got that up. But, you know, the thing is, though, is that he I heard this in 94 when he first ran, because in 94 I was running for Secretary of State, and we had a paper called Assistance Taking Initiative that we, you know, put a lot of different issues in and so on. It was, you know, it's kind of the precursor of Freedom's Phoenix, and we had a print newspaper. And he begged me. He wanted to have it. He was so against the baseball stadium, and he wanted to be perceived as, you know, I'm one of y'all and a libertarian. And in fact, his father was I think it was the ghostwriter of the Heart of a Conservative for Barry Goldwater. You know, his father was heavy duty in with the Goldwater Conservative kind of thing. Well, you know, the fruit fell way far away from that tree. So he understood the rhetoric. He understood. He knew. And there's, you know, a lot of stories, you know, I know John, and I'm just, you know, I you give him the benefit of the doubt. And then it was immediately obvious that he'd gone down the dark side. And that's why I ran against him 3 times. And it's just to bring that stuff out. Well, what happens is then you go to these various events and you talk to him, and you have, and he knows the pressure. Yeah, and he should have known that going in. In fact, that's what I hear from guys like him. And J.D. Hayworth ran in the same election in 94 to become a congressman, and then was beaten by Democrat Harry Mitchell. And now he's running against McCain in the primary for U.S. Senate. Now, I knew J.D. from church. Trent Franks, you know, a congressman here. All three of us went to the same church. You know, I talked to these guys a lot, and Trent and I used to be good friends, and I'm just but I just can't accept some of the stuff that they do and say. And they'll say things like, I'm sure John's talking about, and he did when he was running in 94, well, you need to get me in. We can say whatever, you know, now, just to get in, then we can fix it. J.D. was big on that, yeah, because the district that he ran in, District 6 at the time, went into a very liberal area up in Flagstaff, where Karen English was the incumbent at the time, a Democrat. And he goes, you know, and he say some stuff, and I was running a statewide campaign for Secretary of State, so I'd be at a lot of these things, all these different congressmen. I'm at all, we went to all this stuff. And we had a couple of libertarian candidates that had their own private plane, so we went to everything. We're like, hello. J.D., I go down and go, what the heck, man? Just yesterday you were saying this down in Sun Lakes and, you know, south of Phoenix here. Now we're up in Flagstaff. So he goes, well, you got to know what your audience is. It's 180 degrees from what you were saying. You got to get in, Ernie, so that when you're in, then you could, you know, protect the people against, you know, the big bad stuff. Well, Trent Frank's like, what? You mean things like, let me think, like prescription medication bill that he did? Medicare D or whatever it was? You mean like that? You mean like that? Then you have Shattuck going up. Oh, you gotta stop the things like old national socialization of the entire freaking economy. You mean like that? You mean like that? I have no faith in any of these people. I don't trust any of them.
It's going quickly.
I'm
still an optimist. I guess I'm still a little bit naive. But like I said, back in December when I changed to the Libertarian Party, watching the Republicans tear themselves apart, watching the total irony of your job as a precinct committeeman is to sign up other Republicans. And then I watched as part of the party, the Rob Haneys of the group, the Tom Husbands, that they, oh, guess what? John McCain's got pre-seized signing up Republicans and they're Latinos. Wow. You mean they're doing their job? oh, but you have a problem with it because it's John McCain and this whole immigration thing has divided the party. But it's still the hypocrisy of it. And trust me, I'm not a John McCain lover. Will never endorse him. Will never like him. Think he needs to go. But to replace him with J.D. Hayworth and think that you're somehow getting a better deal?
Yeah, really. All of us that know both of them know that.
I use the analogy, one is a colostomy bag and the other one is a lady's feminine product. I mean, there's really no difference. Take your choice.
It reminds me of the South Park episode where they had to pick a new mascot. You know, it was... what was it? I don't know. It was something disgusting and something disgusting. I don't even want to say, but you know, you must
pretty
vote,
much.
You know? And I'm like, yay. Well, it's really going to shape up to where, you know, there's some districts that are getting some attention, certainly from the libertarians here. We have some good candidates going, but it looks like your race is going to be a really defining race for all of us. So we're like having, you know, and your website, go ahead and give out your website.
My website is voteforgarcia.com, the number four, not the letter four, voteforgarcia.com.
So vote4garcia.com. Garcia's probably not going to hurt with the left. Is there a Democrat in the race?
There is two Democrats in the race. They will have a primary. They're both pretty weak candidates. They've never really proven their activism. Young kids that have not, they only came out because of 1070. The Democrats kind of have a defeatist mentality in that district, knowing that the Republican numbers are not there. I actually have a chance. I mean, if I can get the Democrat vote, independents.
Well, they would have been better off if they just didn't have a Democrat.
If we didn't have any Democrat, I could win.
It's well, we'll see what happens. You're going to win the issue. I can tell you that. That we're going to make sure of that. You know, this is going to be very clear. I tell you what the win loss is in our column on this. If we can have the general populace understand that this 1070 here, certainly in that district in Mesa, if they can understand that this is about national ID, or at least, you know, understand that we think it is. That's the big thing, because sooner or later, they're going to figure it out, too.
Well, Karen Johnson, who previously sat in Russell Pierce's seat, still has questions about the bill being real ID. So I find it ironic that the seat that she pretty much didn't rerun and fight him for, he now comes in and swoops in on something.
Well, she retired. She didn't want to be a legislator, which made her a good legislator. She didn't want to play this game. She came out as an endorsed Barry Hess, a libertarian for governor. You know, they're freaked out by that.
And
oh,
we're working
goodness.
On her endorsement. I've spoken with her several times.
It's she knows that this is a big issue. But, you know, Barry Hess, you know, he has flyers right along with you on this 1070. It's about national ID. It's not about immigration control. It's about people control. So this is where we win. I mean, if you want to say that, you know, it's making sure that the people just understand what's really going on. And, you know, and Andrea, I really appreciate you taking, you know, extracting yourself from inside the very belly of the beast and taking on this issue because you understand the importance of it. That was just really, so many people are going to owe you their gratitude in the future. My children will owe you their gratitude by what you're going to bring out in this.
Well, there's a huge passion. We've been down at the Capitol several times during the concerts and things. There's a group of young people that they have no idea why they're there. They just know that they're impassioned by this 1070. Now, they're, of course, being told by the other side, oh, it's about racism. But I've spoken with them several times and gotten claps when I've explained to them, you know, it's freedom. And my goal is to reach in across the other side and say, we can somehow plant a little mustard seed of faith, of freedom in them, that somehow this will foster. And that when 1070 goes into effect or whatever is going to happen with it, that they will still somehow continue on some sort of an activism path. We're tapping into a whole new set of people here who have never heard the freedom message.
We keep doing it. And I know how effective you can be on the left. When Charles and I were over at Air America affiliate, all of a sudden, the left, the progressives, they became libertarian. They're like, yeah, we get it. Whether they change their registration or not, they understand the fundamental principles. And that's what needs to be done. That's where we win. That is how we're going to win. Information, philosophy, being correct. We'll be right back at the top of the hour with Scott Horton from antiwar.com radio. We'll be right back.